This is Austin Real Estate Investing.
Austin Real Estate Investing.
We'll be discussing real estate investing in Austin, Texas, and bringing you experts from all different sectors of the real estate game. Your host, Jordan Moorhead, is a real estate agent and investor in Austin and is here to help you get started or to build your portfolio and explore new strategies.
Hi, this is Jordan Moorhead, and this is the Austin Real Estate Investing Podcast. Today, I've got another awesome guest on here. I have Darren Christensen. He's an investor and developer in the Austin area, but he's also the president of My Shea Space, a local prefab developer. And we're going to get all into ADUs, what they're doing with ADUs in the Austin area, and how you can use those to make very profitable investments. Hey, Darren, how are you?
Living the dream, buddy. Thanks for having me, Jordan.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on. So, Darren, before we get into anything ADU related, I've got a really important question for you. What's your favorite restaurant in the Austin area?
Yeah, I've got a few that I like, but there's one I'm dying to try, and that's Not a Damn Chance Burgers. Mm. I've heard really good things, and that's my next one that I'm looking forward to chomping down on.
It's really good. We went like in the middle of an afternoon one day, and there wasn't too much of a line. But it's good. I recommend it. Awesome. So real quick, Darren, just a quick introduction. Who are you and how are you involved with real estate investing in the Austin area?
So I am a guy that started looking at how things weren't going to work out in my life if I didn't change things. Huge amounts of debt. And when I met my wife, she had bought a house, and by the time it was 4 years old, it was starting to fall apart. And I just thought there was something wrong with that. Just if you could buy a brand new house and within 4 years, the thing's falling apart, all the things are out of warranty, and you're just kind of left on the hook. So I started looking into building homes better. And I had a little background in rehab of homes. And there I also learned where things started to fall apart and wanted to do something better with that. So we took that to rehabbing, flipping homes, ground up construction, and then went into land development and eventually into prefab homes. So developed the land, bring in a prefab home. From there, it was just a matter of couldn't get a great supply for homes, and the services to hook everything up took way longer than they were supposed to. So I went about looking for ways to partner and solve those problems. And about a year and a half into that, I said, you know what, screw it, I'm just going to do it myself. And if we go small, then we can get around a lot of these logistics issues and then we can just grow the business to make bigger and bigger homes, to go full bore and to the products that I was originally trying to source, but I'd have it all in-house.
So I remember you had an interesting story. You had a prefab home that you bought from somebody else that didn't work out very well. I think that was a lot of the impetus for getting into it yourself. Can you just tell a little bit of that story and what happened and how that was just a bad experience?
Yeah, I mean, everybody that's been in real estate for any length of time has got their horror story, and this one was mine, right? It was getting delivered, and you know, half the roof on one of the modules got ripped off. And they didn't bother to tell us. They just wrapped it up in tarp, and then all the doors were locked, so we couldn't even get in there to do our inspection. And then we had like a week of rain, so everything got flooded in there and just water damage, and had to do a ton of demo. And then just what was supposed to be a 2-week process and getting the whole thing set up ended up taking like 6 months. And when you've got holding costs and everything involved, it just freaking kills you. Mm. So there wasn't really any good accountability. And I lost a lot of faith in like the mobile home industry, which is what controls a lot of both HUD spec and modular spec homes. There's just not a lot of support out there. And a lot of the people that get into these things, it's their last ditch effort. They don't have any other options, which I think we absolutely need that type of housing infrastructure. But on the sales side, it leaves a lot to be desired. So if you're attempting to do this in developing, you probably want to do someone that only built modular spec homes, which there are not very many across the country.
Yeah.
And to clarify modular versus mobile or HUD spec, modular in the state of Texas, at least, is legally indistinguishable from a site-built home. So it appraises the same as a site-built home. And that's huge if you're an investor. The idea is you're supposed to be able to take something and develop a piece of property way faster than you could with a stick-built home. But when you don't have those resources, those contractors in place and the support on the factory side, then it doesn't end up being any faster and you don't save the money or the timeline.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important distinction, is it's legally indistinguishable from a site-built home.
Right.
I think a lot of people hear modular and think mobile home.
Right.
And I've seen some great modular homes where you'd have no idea they were modular home. I mean, really, right. I would say a lot of people could see a double wide mobile home and not know that it's a mobile home if it's on a foundation and it's installed correctly. But a modular home is just way above that. And it looks like a really nice house. People say, oh, wow, this is awesome. But like you're saying, the goal with modular housing is for it to built, I think that's the best way to put it, because the setup makes it sound like it's a mobile home. But if you could get it built quickly and you can get it built cheaper than a regular stick-built home, which in all honesty, we've been building homes the same way for how long? I mean,
forever.
Yeah, forever. Yeah. It's crazy that we have not innovated on this. And I know this is what you're trying to do, and this is what modular builders are trying to do, is just innovate in the way we build housing and make it faster and more effective and more energy efficient. Sure. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, Darren, I know we talked about My Shea Space right when we started. What is My Shea Space and what do y'all do there?
My Shea Space is a prefab building. We're building cabins, ADUs, event spaces, that sort of thing, in the 300 to 400 square foot range right now. And they're primarily geared towards short-term rentals, hospitality. They're super durable and meant to handle being turned over quite frequently. Mm-hmm. They can very easily be adapted to live-in situations, and we can customize the kitchens and that sort of thing to make it fit that way. As you're seeing or everywhere, there's a big need for affordable housing, and whether that's somebody downsizing or adding an accessory unit to a property that you already own for additional income, all of those things help. And any way that we can tie in there and make people's lives either more fulfilled or easier, I think is a great thing.
Hey guys, this is Jordan Moorhead here. And I wanted to ask if you could do a huge favor for me. If you could go leave a review for this podcast wherever you're listening to it, that would really help me get this into the hands of other people that are interested in information about Austin real estate investing, and I'd be able to help more people. Thanks, guys.
I love the ADUs for additional income.
Yeah.
So in my head, you know, you've got a house, you have a backyard with the house. If you could put in it, in like a, for example, there's a lot of ADUs in East Austin. I owned one. I owned a single family with an ADU. I rented the main house out for $1,800 or $1,900, and this was back in 2020, so this was a while ago. But I rented it out for $1,800, and then I rented the one bedroom ADU behind that house out for $1,400.
Yeah,
and that's just a game changer. Like, you've got this house, this whatever, 1,200, 1,300 square foot house. And then you had a 500 square foot ADU in the backyard that you rented out for 70%, 60% of what the whole house rented out for. That's just such a great way to boost your income and also increase the value of the home. So I think that kind of leads into my next question, is what are some of the use cases? And you mentioned some of them, cabins, extra living space, rental income. What are some of the use spaces you're seeing people get ADUs for?
So right now, with the new zoning that's going into place in Austin, we're looking at increasing density inside of Austin. Like you were mentioning, like your property that you have, getting a piece of property is the biggest step, right? But it's also a kind of a big deal. If you're getting a duplex in Austin now, what are you spending? 800,000 thereabouts?
It totally depends where, but yeah, somewhere in the 500 to 1.5 million range.
Okay, right.
Depending on where it is.
You can get a duplex or a single family home, and then for a fraction of that, add another unit.
Yeah.
So taking into account the cost of the unit and then the utility hookups, you could be into it as cheap as 70 grand. But 70 grand adds you a whole nother revenue stream, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you couldn't double that and get another home. Like you could, there's no way you're getting a home for 140, 150 grand anymore that you would get that same sort of income stream from. So if you're going to do it in the city, that's a huge step. Getting a initial piece of property, whether that's a single family or duplex, and then adding on to it, those additional units come in so much cheaper because most of the infrastructure is already there.
Mm-hmm.
On the opposite side of that, where we may have inner city, we might cost us 20 grand to get all the utilities hooked up. That same 20 grand, if we're doing it on a rural piece of property, we could hook half a dozen of these up to it. So it's this much steeper rate of return when you can multiply the units that you can put on there for the same amount of investment. And the infrastructure is the biggest obstacle, right? Mm-hmm. But it takes a little bit more figuring. And I'd say overall, in Central Texas, most of the utilities are really easy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're out far enough, then it's a septic, and those things are fairly easy to work with. It might take you 3 months to get a permit.
Mm-hmm.
But while you're, it's going to do the same in Austin to get your permitting, right? But in that 3 months, you can have another unit built offsite. So by the time your permitting's in place, you can lay any groundwork that needs to be done and have your unit up inside of a week, and then you're off to the races. I think that's the huge thing, especially in the side of investment, is where you can have something turnkey within, you know, one quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, within 3 months of being able to, you know, if you've got your property, you get your permitting, and then you land a unit on there, and then it's just a matter of probably a couple of days to get all the contractors in there to hook up water, electrical, and sewer. But those things are all super simple and most likely short runs, right? So then you're off to the races. You're ready to go. That doesn't happen in site built or stick built.
Mm-hmm.
No, you would then be starting the process, yeah, after you get your permitting, and then you'd be another 6 months after that, right? So we can cut that time down by 2/3.
I would say 6 months at a very minimum. I've seen it, yeah, take forever for people to get stick-built homes built in Austin. So it sounds like, as far as profit potential goes, being a little bit outside of town would probably be better here for a real estate investment perspective. If you wanted to put a couple of these on a piece of property, you know, your costs are lower to install utilities or get the utilities run. You know, the installation costs are probably lower. I would say it's probably faster working with the smaller towns or the more rural areas to get the permits.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
You could call somebody and know them by name. So by the time you're on your second project, you've got everything figured out.
Oh yeah.
A lot of what we're seeing is people that will have properties around breweries or wineries or around, you know, shopping districts that have events that happen semi-annually.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's Wimberley and the whole Hill Country area. There's a lot of activity that happens out there. And even if you're in a seasonal cycle, right, that still makes a lot of sense. And then if you're wanting to, you can drop your rates when there aren't local events. But again, these things go up so quickly and you have so little into them. I'd say there's an advantage going either way. So if you do it in inner city, you're doing infill,
mm-hmm,
it's going to be really easy for you to incorporate that into a loan or refinance it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's got all of its permitting. It's going to show as real as anything else. If you're doing something that's in a rural area, it's going to be harder to get the comps, right? So it's going to be harder to get the back end return of refinancing it or selling it, right? Those things are a little more challenging, but on to offset, then you have a lot more of a capital gain for your rentals and so much less put into infrastructure. So it's all, you know, it's a balance one way or the other.
Have you wanted to be part of GoBundance, the tribe of millionaires, but just haven't hit that millionaire status yet? Well, now you can, not even being a millionaire, by joining our new program, GoBundance Emerge. My name's Jamie Gruber, creator of GoBundance Emerge and member of the GoBundance community. And now you can join GoBundance.com/emerge, GoBundance.com/emerge. Use code Jordan for $100 off this 12-week goal-setting program and mastermind that'll propel you to being a whole-life millionaire.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it's the whole old adage of location, location, location.
Yeah.
You might get much better cash flow out in a rural area. It's probably going to be way easier to get it done. But as far as liquidity or profit from that one property, let's just call it one ADU you put in or added to a single family home in the city, you're probably going to make more money. But starting from scratch out, you know, outside of Leander, or like you said, outside of Marble Falls or Wimberley, one of those areas where you could probably pick land up a little cheaper and put a couple of these out there and make nice little Airbnbs that people like to get away. Mm-hmm. You know, I know I live in Austin. We like to rent Airbnbs that are just kind of a little bit outside of Austin, maybe an hour and a half, and go hang out sometimes and just have a good, more relaxing time.
Yeah. I mean, we can set these things up to be very much like an RV. This plug and play like an RV. So if somebody's got an RV spot, or if they want to put in essentially RV infrastructure, but like I was saying, you could probably put six of these units for the same septic requirements as you would have for a single family home.
Mm-hmm.
And then your power requirements be very similar as well for six of these, depending on how we set them up. So you could put them in rural places. They're about the cost of an RV, really. And you have way more usable space. Like you're on one level, you've got space to move around. We really equate it to a hotel room. And a lot of the designs are designed after hotel rooms. So the 400 series or the 300 series is about 300 square feet. The 400 series, about 400 square feet. And you go from a standard hotel room, which is going to be in your 250 to 300 square feet range. And then beyond that would be your like five-star hotel that has a standard, not a suite, but like right, a nice hotel room that you've got plenty of room to move around in. That's what these are like, as opposed to being in an RV, which is less than 8 feet wide on the inside. And you're always going to be having to squeeze by something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or even the shipping containers. Like shipping containers is pretty popular thing, but again, you run into that livable space is you're like 7 feet on the inside, and it's just really hard to spend any time in there. If there's more than one person, you're always going to have to squeeze by. There's only enough width to put a bed, so that the bed then has to go on one end of the container. Like there's not a whole lot of options of how you lay things out.
Yeah, the livability isn't very good. Yeah, the long and narrow, I've never been a huge fan of. And I've seen a lot of different setups there. So it sounds like easiest to set them up outside of town. Might be the most profitable in the sense of cash flow outside of town, especially with like an Airbnb type model. But as far as most profitable on the sale, because you're adding square footage, or you're adding an extra structure, that would most likely be in the city. But it's going to be more of a headache to get done. Probably going to take a little bit more time. It's going to cost a little bit more money. What do you think the future of ADUs in Austin looks like, Darren? Because I know everybody's talking about this home initiative. Right. It's all you hear about. Oh, Austin has now increased zoning. They increased density. They're allowing everybody to add ADUs to everything. I've not heard anybody actually completing a project or getting approved for a project to do anything like this, but it certainly seems the direction they're heading, and it's not just Austin.
Right. Yeah. So right now, Austin just passed the new zoning in February. So it just happened. So City of Austin doesn't even know how all these things are going to play, right?
Yeah.
We're really testing the waters, and we're having conversations with clients now about, this is what we think is going to happen. This is the experience we've had with site builds before. And essentially, Austin's treating everything as site built until otherwise noted. So we're going to need an engineered foundation on anything that goes into the city of Austin. So it's not going to be a requirement outside of the city, which isn't a big deal, right? But it's another step and a little bit more expense there.
Sure.
It would be a huge boon to the city to add some density and some affordable units. Is that going to be the sole thing that happens? Absolutely not, right? We're going to have some builders come in there that are going to make the most of this, because this isn't the only thing it's doing. We're getting rid of the McMansion rules. So where there was this invisible tent over lots before, we can build the full 35 feet, the entire lot, you know, minus our setbacks and our permeability. So you can go three stories high now.
Oh.
Where you weren't able to do that before. So there's going to be condos coming in. There's going to be, or townhomes, you know, those sort of things that are going to be higher end units. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And is that feasible for everyone? Not exactly. Are those prices going to be more affordable for the common person? No. So there's absolutely going to be tons of that stuff. And, you know, that's just is what it is. But at the same time, your younger investor could go this other route and have a huge bang for their buck and doing this on a small scale. You can do it on a big scale too. There's guys I know that have dozens of single family lots in Austin, and you could do this on any lot that's big enough. So it's a matter of how much input do you want to have and what's your timeline.
Mm-hmm. So I know you've been talking to the city, you've been in meetings with people in the city. Right. What's it going to take for somebody that might own a single family house in Austin to pop an ADU down in their backyard? I know we talked earlier and you said they are allowing it to happen, but like you said, it needs an engineered foundation. And then they're making you finish it on site. Is that right?
For us. So the way we're doing it is, we're a prefab builder. So the idea is we want everything to be built off site. Mm-hmm. We're still going through all of the certifications in our factory to be able to do that. City of Austin will allow something that is built off site to be brought in, but they have to have all of the state certifications and third party inspections, all those things lined up. We're still going through that process. So we'll get there. In the meantime, we still have options. So we can deliver an engineered shell of a building that's up to completely finished on the outside and then drop it off. And then got a contractor that can just knock out the interior finishings. That's how us personally are having to do it inside the city right now. If we're outside the city, we can drop the entire unit completely finished and do that. We can also build park models. So if there's somebody that's looking to build out an RV park or place one in an RV park, we can absolutely do that as well. It's just a different rules that you're building to.
Sure. So I know I would like to think I'm familiar with the park model RV. What would you call a park, or how would you explain a park model RV?
The park model RV is under 400 square feet for the livable area. Mm-hmm. It's on a chassis and it is DOT registered. So it's like a vehicle would be. It actually gets registered that way and is technically not for full-time living as per the code is written. There's plenty of people that live in them full-time, but it's a way that we can get product moved, and it's a way that the industry has made things a little more affordable and portable. And that's the other element that comes into play in places too, is if it's on a chassis, a trailer, right? It's got wheels. It's not a permanent structure. So we can get around some tax and some zoning requirements in certain areas by going that route.
Okay. So you say it's on a chassis. Does that mean it has wheels, or does it have wheels that come on it and people take the wheels off when they get placed?
Jordan Moorhead here. Really quick, I wanted to tell you a couple other ways you can keep track of us. If you want to listen to all these podcasts and ask questions, the Moorhead team on YouTube is the best place to be. And then Austin Real Estate Investors on Meetup is a great place to keep track of all of our meetups we have going on.
There are some places that require you to keep the wheels on, but in general, you'd bring it in and you'd take the wheels and axles off, ideally. Okay. And that would allow you to set the home lower. Instead of being 3 feet off the ground, you could have it, you know, one step up off the ground. Be much more convenient, I would think.
That's cool. No, I'm working on mobile home park deals and thinking about like what are the options, and I think it was more of a selfish question than anything.
Sure.
But no, that's really awesome. So we've talked about a couple different options. Could we maybe go over cost of, hey, I've got some land out in Leander, hey, I have a single family house in Austin, or hey, I have space where I could put a park model RV. Like what are the three main, it sounds like there's three main options we've been talking about. Now, what are the costs associated with each of those? For let's say whatever we could do, like a 400 square foot, the max on each.
Okay. So the infrastructure, especially rural, and I know that's very well. So we're looking at PEC electric. If you've already got property and it's got power to it, then it's just adding another meter loop. So you're $1,000 into a meter loop. And then connecting it directly to the structure itself, which is can literally be as easy as plugging it in like an RV. If you've already got a septic, this is an accessory unit that you could plug into an existing septic system. If you don't have a septic system, they're going to run between 10 and 20,000. 20,000 is usually one of those really hard cases where they're going to have to go a far distance or dig through a whole bunch of rock or be one of those ones with the sprayers. But a lot of what we see in the hill country are gravity fed systems that are the cheapest, most reliable systems that don't require any maintenance contracts. Mm-hmm. They just gravity flow, they work. And we typically see those in the $8,000 to $15,000 range.
Okay.
But if you're doing smaller units, like I said, you could get six of these units on a $10,000 septic system.
Nice. And so these are all electric too, right? There's no gas involved.
Correct. Yeah. There's a whole line of literature in the code books for gas. And we can just cut all that out. They're pretty particular about it and things that are going to be moving down the road, understandably.
Yeah.
But we can set up the electric loads for whatever you're needing. Mm-hmm. Like there's people that have asked us about doing an art studio. So they need a heavy circuit for their kiln. Or if you want to run it off a 30 or 50 amp RV plug, then we just need to tune the rest of the system to run off of that. So you're not tripping breakers or anything.
Sure. Yeah. And I would think, you know, I know people like gas stoves. I really think we're moving away from gas stoves personally, whether or not you have an issue with that, not you personally, but whoever's listening, I think it's just going to happen.
We've got air fryers now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're moving away from gas, at least for cooking for most people in most areas. So yeah,
we can set up a kitchen however anybody wants. It's not a problem.
Okay, cool. So it's like we're sounding like 10 to 20 grand for utilities, depending on where you are to set it up. And that's more the rural side, right?
I'd say, I mean, if we want to go conservative, right, and just say 20 grand, I'd say the 20 grand really gets you either situation. So long as you're not having to like drill a well or, you know, do super infrastructure. But the 20 grand gets you one unit in the city.
Okay.
You get, you know, six units outside the city for the same amount of money.
Wow. Okay. And then for the park model RV side, what's the cost on that typically?
So they're going to start out at about $50,000 for one that's got kitchen and a bathroom. It's fully built out. Mm-hmm. And then up to about 80 to 85, if you want to check all the boxes and get every single option. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're looking at.
What kind of options do these have? So what are some of the options? I know you've talked about that before with me. Like there are different extras you can add to these.
Right. Yeah. So our first iterations that we were doing were an exercise in how inexpensively can we manufacture these things while using the best products on the market. Mm-hmm. And we quickly realized that they weren't pretty enough. They were very utilitarian. Yeah. And we went and redesigned everything to be Instagram worthy.
Our
primary demographic is people that use these for hospitality and short-term rentals. So it's a big deal for them to be pretty. So those have been completely redesigned, and we have wraparound metal. We have, you know, a Nordic version now, and still using all really good products, which has bumped our price a little bit over what it was originally. Mm-hmm. But we were able to do a bunch of prototyping and see where things mattered and where we could have fewer cuts, use materials more efficiently, and then move things through the factory more efficiently. So that's all helped things come down. So for options, we're looking at, you know, a layout option where we want windows and doors. Initially, we weren't even moving windows or doors or even doing windows. Like, we had sliding glass doors. So now we've found a way to incorporate those without adding a whole lot of cost.
Oh, really?
So we've got,
I know when I first saw the prototype, it was just a sliding glass door. And you said you have other options now too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So we've got everything engineered now. So we've got ratings for 130 mile an hour winds and 20 pounds per square foot snow ratings. So we can go anywhere in Texas except for right on the coast in the hurricane zone. We are just shy of hitting the hurricane rating as of now. And then we've been able to figure out where we can put the windows and doors and openings to still achieve all of those things.
Okay. Awesome. And we'll definitely put a link in the show notes for anybody listening that wants to see. Obviously, it's hard to visualize all this stuff. We'll put a link in the show notes for everybody to be able to click and see and understand what you can get here. Darren, it sounds like you've made a tremendous amount of improvements just in a few months. I know we talked and had a meetup. I can't remember exactly when that was. Do you? It was a few months ago.
It was end of last year. I think it was probably September, October, somewhere in there.
Yeah, maybe even later. It was at least October. But you've made a tremendous amount of improvements since then. What are the long-term goals for MySHA Space?
Long-term, we want to go bigger, right? So we've got our minimum viable product. If you're in business, you've heard that term, right? So we've got our factory that's about 10,000 square feet. And we should be able to produce about 200 units a year out of that.
Nice.
What we're going to quickly run into is capacity for bringing enough material through. Okay. So once we've got everything proven, then we'll go to a bigger site, build a bigger factory. And at the same time, we're going to be looking at going vertical and joining units horizontally. So instead of just being standalone units, we'll be able to stack them. Mm-hmm. And we'll be able to make larger square footages and even longer units. So right now we're capped at about 36, 37 feet long with how we're set up. So we can do longer units, possibly even wider units. But then with the ability to join multiples together, that's going to be a huge difference in the reach that we can have. Beyond that, I want to have my own little parks and be able to put these things out. That was a huge motivator for us to find something that worked for our own needs.
Yeah, I know you've been working on that for a couple of years for some of the land you own personally. Yeah, that's huge. That's awesome. No, I'm really excited to see where it goes because I'm really astounded that you've made so many changes in just a few months here.
It's the hardest thing I've ever done.
I'm sure, because you're it's just completely new. You're not recreating something, you're not ripping off something somebody else has ever done. It's all completely brand new, and all the laws and regulations are changing by the day. And like you said, the city of Austin doesn't even understand their own regulations they just put into effect, which I think will probably take some time before we'll see the blueprint. But it sounds like you're kind of making it as you go.
Yeah, it's kind of a perfect storm of where we're at with a lot of people's attitudes changing on where they want to live or where they want to rent and being okay with alternative building practices. Now, we use very standard building practices in the, inside the factory. There's some people using concrete or other exotic materials or materials that come in from China. And we went away from that because then we're locked into a single supply. Mm. But if we can get supply from multiple different places, then we can maintain, you know, both building product and keep a more stable cost on things. On that side of it. And then when we grow, we're looking at, we want to get into developing affordable housing communities. We were talking earlier about this, and I think this is going to be a movement where we're just going to have to push the envelope and bring all the investors together to do this, as opposed to waiting for the city to okay something or doing it piecemeal, you know, one property at a time, because there are going to be bigger investors that are going to come in. And like I said, they're going to be building the townhomes and condos that aren't going to be for affordable housing. And there's several examples that are already happening in and around Austin with tiny home villages and some other initiatives doing specifically that. And I think that's really the way that we're going to be going, is getting a larger parcel of land and then strictly having a certain caliber of home or, you know, maximum square footage, so that we can make sure that those are met, like that we actually have affordable housing. And once we get to a certain capacity, right, it becomes affordable. So the one-off isn't always affordable for the investor. And if somebody's having to invest that capital to make something happen, that investor needs a return, right? That's completely understandable. But if we can multiply things, if we can go on a orders of magnitude larger and we can do 100 homes, then it really becomes just a matter of scale. We can do pop-up factories at locations around, and it really makes sense to do that when we get into the 100 home range, right? So we can have the homes built on site. We can get around a lot of the other regulation stuff, and we can just be cranking them out one, you know, one a week from every bay that we have available to us. So we could do 100 unit development in, you know, 6 to 9 months.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's huge.
That's where we're thinking and partnering with developers that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. What's the best way for people to learn more about it? I know you have a website, My Shea Space.
Yeah, myshayspace.com, at My Shea Space on Instagram. That's primarily where everything, the feeds are going.
Okay, everything Instagram mostly.
And we actually have a promotion going on right now, March to 1,000. So we've got $1,000 off all units ordered in March as we crested 1,000 Instagram followers. We actually just hit that yesterday. So now I think we're at 1,030 or 40 or something now. But yeah, so we're celebrating that and offering $1,000 off.
That's cool. So myshayspace.com, is there like a form somebody could fill out to request information about buying one of these?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got forms online and they can fill that out and we'll get back to you ASAP.
All right. Awesome. And you're at myshayspace on Instagram too. You're right.
Yep.
Cool. Well, Darren, thank you so much. I'm so excited to see where you take this. Absolutely. Make sure to follow Darren at My Shea Space on Instagram. Of course, I'm at Jordan_Moorhead on Instagram. We will have the link to My Shea Space in the show notes. But yeah, you guys, this is going to, the ADU revolution is just getting started. The municipalities are getting in line with all these new rules and regulations. And I think this is going to be one of the ways just to build massive wealth and make huge passive income here in the coming years, and getting ahead of it's going to be huge. Awesome, Darren. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming on. We'll talk here soon.
Yeah, for sure. Guys, have a great one.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.